Begin the current daf mesech, this Erev daf nun gimel. We begin on the bottom daf nun beis mid beis. We begin the new parak, the fifth parak mesech this Erev. Continuing along the theme of the previous parak, discussing the halachas of tchumen. But specifically, when we begin the fifth parak of Ketzah Ma'abrin, our Mishnah will begin discussing the parameters of what a city is. And that is just like a person. If he, let's say, is out in the fields, where he doesn't have any other area, no home, no nothing, he gets, if he designates that as his shvi, so he gets 2,000 amos. That is what we know, as we learned on the previous daf, that's the tchum, the boundary where a person could go in either direction. So to a city, is considered as one big dalet amos, one big area. And when you leave the city, you get 2,000 amos in any direction. But the question is, where does the city start and end? What are the exact parameters? Our Mishnah will discuss one aspect of that regarding how we draw the lines of the actual city. So our Mishnah begins. Ketzad ma'abrin esa'arm. How can we extend the city? And that is, the Gemara will later explain what the terminology of ma'abrin, what does it mean, like a woman that's pregnant, that's the word ibur. Because there's a Mishnah later on that says that if someone puts his Eruv in what's called ibur shel'ir, in the extension of the city, that there's a certain type of halacha that applies to that. So obviously, what our Mishnah is addressing, that there is such a concept called ibur shel'ir, there's the city, and then there's the extension of the city. Our Mishnah is going to discuss now, what does that mean that you can really have where the city ends, but there is something that will extend the city. So our Mishnah explains, bayis nichnas bayis yotze. If let's say there's a home going in and there's a home going out, which Rashi explains to mean, when you're coming to make the definition of the exact parameters of the city, and you want to measure out again, where does the 2,000 amas start from to know where it ends? If let's say the city walls were not really a wall, but rather it was the homes themselves that were side by side. It wasn't a flat wall that there is. They're rather the homes are near each other and they're connected, and they're the walls of the city. It's the homes on the other end. Now, one of the homes is coming more into the city than the rest of them. So therefore, you see that coming in, you see that there is this cavity, so to speak, from the wall that's going in. So too, you can have a home that sticks out more than the rest of the other ones. That and therefore, you see that when you're looking at the wall, you see that it sticks out more. Similarly, pigum nichnas pigum yetze. You have a tower going in, a tower going out. For example, let's say the city was surrounded with a wall. Not like the case we just described where it was the homes themselves that formed the perimeter. But rather, they made a wall around the city. And then on certain types of walls, they would have these towers, these round towers that would be sticking out of the wall. Now, sometimes they would be sticking more in than the wall itself, and sometimes they'd be sticking out more than the rest of the wall. Or hayushim kududiyas gevayas asar tfachim, or if there were ruins that were 10 tfachim high. And that is, let's say, one of the corners of the city. There were these gedudias. And gedudias are the broken walls of the houses, the homes that were destroyed, and they're within 70 amas and a fraction from this city, as we're going to explain later on in this parak. So therefore, if it's in that area, we continue on the top of Nun Gimel and Aleph. Similarly, Ugesharm, or if let's say there are bridges, Unefashis, or tombs, these are types of building, type of structures that they make on a grave, which Shiesh Behen Beis Dira, that at least if it has, if definitely by the bridge, it has somewhere where someone could dwell in, like someone that's watching the bridges, that the toll collector, that there's somewhere where there's a dwelling place, that's the only way we can consider this as an extension of the city. Then, if you have any one of these things, again, if you have the wall of the city where it ends, but there's one home sticking out a little bit more, or there's a tower sticking out more, or within 70 amas and a fraction from the rest of the city, there is this gedudiyos, or this bridge, or this building that's over the grave, if they're within 70 amas and a fraction, then then we extend the measurement of the city opposite that thing. In other words, if let's say this one thing that's protruding, let's say it's one of these, a gesher, a bridge, that's part, that has somewhere where the toll collector, he lives there. Now, if that's sticking out, let's say, on the northeastern part of the city, so then we see as if there's something else parallel that, corollarily to that, on the other corner of the southeast. And therefore, now we draw a line from that, what's sticking out by the northeast, and now we see the city extended because of this, whatever it is, a home or a tower, whatever it is that's sticking out more. So therefore, we make a line going all the way down as if there was something sticking out, as if the city was extending on the southern part too. And we measure that line that it should be a straight line, because we want that the tchum should be equal by both corners, and not that here it should be extending out more, and then here it's And then on the bottom here, it's narrower that it has to go, so to speak, on the diagonal. We don't do that. We make it that it has to be an exact square. If it's not a square, but it has to be corners that is on a perfect line, on whatever direction it is, on north, east, south, and west. If you're extending on one part, so then you're going to extend it all the way down the other part too. And now the Mishnah says that not only do we do this squaring off by this, how we define the parameter of the city, but similarly we do that for the tchum itself, which is the 2,000 amos that it extends out. And what we do is we make the tchum itself, the boundary of the 2,000 amos limit for Shabbos, kimin tavla mervaz, like a square tablet, so that you should gain the corners. And that is, we want that you should make like this almost like an X. You're getting in every direction 2,000 amos. Now when you make that, you don't circle around that plus sign or that X. You make a square around that. Because what happens is, if you're going to make a circle, although you're going to get in every direction 2,000 amos, but then you're going to be losing the corners, so to speak, of where you can go in this direction and this direction. So the idea what we want to have over here is not that, as Rashi explains, that it has to be that we square it literally. Rather, the case we're talking about in the Mishnah is that we're talking about a city that's 2,000 amos by 2,000 amos, but you could have a city that the length is longer or the width is shorter. The main idea what we're trying to say is that obviously you're always going to be getting in the length 2,000 amos. That's what every direction you can go. But the width of how far this goes depends on the width of the city, but the idea is that it's always going to be squared and not circled, as we're going to explain later, that we want to gain the corners, which is that not only are you going to get 2,000 amos, you're going to get 2,800 amos, because Balach Sinan, the diagonal, to get the corners, although 2,000 amos really a circle would give you a perfect 2,000 amos everywhere, but we make it like a square, as we had learned out from a pasuk, Pas Kedma, that we say that when you get it with the corners too. Therefore, we're saying that you're going to get 2,800 amos, so we square it, or again, it could be a rectangle, the point is, but it's not going to be a circle, because we want you to gain the corners. Now the Gemara discusses the exact terminology of our Mishnah. Rav Shmuel, Chatoni Ma'abrin. One of them learns in our Mishnah, the way actually it's printed in our Gemara, that the word Ketzin Ma'abrin Esir is with an ayin. That V'chatoni Ma'abrin, and another one said that it's with an aleph. So the Gemara explains what these two versions are. Ma'adi Toni Ma'abrin, the one that learns it with an aleph. What does that mean, Ma'abrin? That's aver, that's limb and another limb. That means to say that we add limbs, so to speak, to the city. That if there's, as we explained in the Mishnah, if there's a limb sticking out of the city by the southeast part of the city, then we see as if there's another limb on the northeast part of the city sticking out, and we measure from there. That's what it means, Ma'abrin, that we're adding on limbs, that although there's only one limb here, we'll add on another limb because we want it to be perfect line. To get that square, we don't do it jagged and different dimensions. Whatever it's sticking out, we make it a complete square. That's if you learn in Ma'abrin with an aleph. Or Manatoni Ma'abrin, the one who learns it with an ayin. Ke'isha Ubra, it's like a pregnant woman. That is, it extends. Literally, the woman is really this size. But this will extend her further out. So to here, although the city really is this far, this other structure will now extend it to a different dimension because, again, we want to have it uniform. Now the Gemara brings three similar machlekes between Rav and Shmuel. As the Gemara says, there's a pasuk in Bereishis Chav Gimel Tes that talks about Avram Avinu purchasing the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, the double cave, which he wants to get from Ephron. He's going to give all the money. So it says over there, it was called Ma'aras HaMachpelah, the double cave. And as Rashi says, that since this machlekes, Rav and Shmuel isn't understanding the terminology of what does it mean Machpelah, so it's brought over here because, just like they argue in the terminology of our Mishnah, if it's with an ayin or an aleph, and same goes with the next Gemaras that they argue on Amrafel and a Melech Chadish that came on Mitzrayim. So Rav and Shmuel, they have this argument about why it was called a double cave. Chadam or Shnei Batim, there were two rooms that were there in this cave. Zelef Nemizeh, one inside of the other one, that means you would come into one, and then from there you go into another one. The Chadam or Bayez V'Ali Al-Gabab. This that it was double was there was a room, and a room on top of that one. And that's why it was double, means with two roofs. It was a double building. So therefore the Gemara says, Bishlem Lamanda Amar Zial Gavzeh, if you say that interpretation of that it was one on top of another, Sahana Machpelah, I can understand why it was called a double cave. In other words, a cave is usually only one roof. This was the double one because it had one roof on top of another. Elamanda Amar Shnei Batim Zel Lefinim Zeh, but the one that learns it was only one room inside of another one, my Machpelah. That why is it called the double cave? That doesn't. It's not the proper terminology of saying a double. There's two rooms, but it does not consider a doubling of the cave. It just has two compartments. So why is it called the double cave? So that Madama learns it was called double shekfula bezugais because it was double with pairs. That is, all those that were buried over there were buried in pairs, husband and wife. And that's why it was in pairs, as it says in the Pasuk in Bereishis Memtes, that there is where they buried Avram and Sarah, and that's where all these were buried, as the Gemara brings. It says in a different Pasuk, in Bereishis Lamed, Pasuk of Zion, says that Yaakov came to Yitzchak, his father, in Mamre, the Kiryas Ha'arba, that was Chevron, where Avram and Yitzchak had lived. So the Pasuk says, Mamre Kiryas Ha'arba. This was Mamre, which was the city of the four. Now, what does it mean, the city of the four? This is going to be related to why it was called Moras HaMachpelah, the Amr B'Yitzchak. Kiryas Ha'ar B'Zugais. It was called the city of the four because it was the city of the four peers. Because that is where they were buried. That is the Moras HaMachpelah, which was there in Hebron. That's Adam and Chava. That's the first peer. Avram and Sarah. Yitzchak V'Rivka and Yaakov Aleah. These are the four peers that were buried over there. That's where this Mandama learns. It was Moras HaMachpelah because they were buried in peers over there. The next pasuk they argue about is a pasuk in Bereishis that says in the days of Amraphel, who was the king of Shinar, and Aryach, that was the king of Elasar, and Kedalaim, that was the king of Elam, and Siddal, that was the king of Goyim. That's what the pasuk there says. These are the four kings that were more powerful than the five kings. And then Avram Avinu came to save his relative Lot from that war. So it says, Vayhi b'mei Amraphel. It was in the days of Amraphel. So Rav Shmuel, they argue about who was this person and why was he called Amraphel. Chadam and Nimrod Shmai. One said that really his name was Nimrod. We know the famous Nimrod, the one that was there and tried burning Avram Avinu. As it says, V'lomenek Shmai Amraphel. Why was he called Amraphel? Sh'amar v'hippel l'Avram Avinu b'teichiv sh'neish. That's where the word Amraphel is from. It's a contraction of the word Sh'amar that he said, that he should be thrown, that Avram Avinu should be thrown into the fiery furnace because Avram Avinu didn't want to bow to the pressure of the Avodah Zarah. And therefore, that's why it was called Amraphel, but really he was Nimrod. The Chadam Amraphel Shmai. The other one says, no, really his name was Amraphel. V'lemnik Shmai Nimrod. Why did he get the nickname of Nimrod? Shehimrid, that's where the word Nimrod, that he caused a rebellion as Kol Olam Kulei Olav of the whole entire world on him, which is a euphemism, but they used the proper terminology. You don't want to say that against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. B'malchuse, during his reign, that's why he was called Nimrod, because he caused this rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The next pasuk that Rav and Shmuel argue about is a pasuk in Shemais, in the beginning of Sefer Shemais, that says that a new king came on Egypt that didn't know Yosef. And he made all these decrees, and that's when all the real Sheba, the real servitude of Mitzrayim started. So the pasuk says, V'yokim melech chadash ha-Mitzrayim, that a new king came on Egypt. Rav and Shmuel, we have machlekes Rav and Shmuel. Chadar mechadash mamash, it really was a new king. V'chadar meno, sh'neschad shuk zay Yosef. It's just that he made new decrees. So Madama Chadish Mamash, the Gemara explains that the one that says that it was a new king, literally, why did he say that? The Chesim Chadish, because it says a new king. Why should we say that it's not real? It says a new king, it was a new king. The one that says that, no, really the same old power. And it's just that he made new decrees. Why does he say that? It doesn't say that the first one died and that a new one came. So what does it mean, Melech Chadish? It means that he just made new decrees. But then the Gemara asks, according to the one that says, that he really was the same old power. He just made new decrees. But it says that he didn't know Yosef. The old power knew him. He was there. He told him the dreams. He saved all the food. He did everything. A new power could be. He never knew. He came. He lived in a different town. So how do you understand that if it says he didn't know Yosef? So Maya Shalom Yoda says, what does it mean he didn't know Yosef? To have a dummy command lo yoda lo Yosef klal. It seemed, it appeared as if he never knew who this Yosef was. Yosef, who saved his country, all his relatives are here and he's making them into hard servitude and hard labor. That was Ashalom Yoda says, he made believe it appeared as if he didn't know Yosef. So then brings a mnemonic for the following agadatos that are there. It says, Simon, the mnemonic, Ishmoina Esther 18, Ishnai Masa 12, Lamana we learned, but David regarding David, Vayavin, and they understood. These are signs to remember, at least in the times of the Gemara, they had memorized all the teachings they learned, so they use a lot of mnemonics. So the Gemara goes and brings certain teachings that are related to what we were just discussing regarding ma'abrin or ma'abrin with an ayin or with an aleph. What was the proper terminology? So related to this, the Gemara brings Amar B'yechnan. Yod ches yamim gedalti etzel Reb Oysha Beribi. For 18 days I spent by Reb Oysha Beribi. Now the terminology Beribi just means that he was a great person in his generation. Wherever it says Beribi, that's what it means. It's some type of a title. So for 18 days I was there. V'lo lemadati mimenu. And I didn't learn from him. Elo davar echad b'mishnah saying the only one thing regarding our mishnah that was ketsed me'aben nesa'arim ba'alef. I learned from him that when the proper version of the girsanah mishnah that ketsed me'aben, how do you extend it, is with an aleph, as we explained. That means aver adding on limbs to make it uniform.
The Gemara asks, "Ini, is that really so?" But we have a different statement.
This great Rabbi Yishia had 12 different students. And for 18 days I spent amongst them. And I learned the heart of each one. That I realized how sharp he was. And I recognized the different type of sharpness of each one of the students. And I also understood the wisdom of each one. How much smarter one is from the other. How much one is more learned than the other. So therefore, how could you say only learned one thing of the Mishnah? You see how much he learned. He understood all the 12 students in their wisdom, how sharp they were. So the Gemara answers, the heart of each one, and the wisdom of each one. Gemara, yeah, that he learned. He understood personality and character. However, Gemara la Gemara, but text, that he had not learned. It was other things that he learned, but when it came to text, there was only one thing that he learned in our Mishnah. A different version to resolve this contradiction is Minayhu did who Gomer. You're right, he learned from the students. You see, he obviously spoke to them and he understood them. He understood each one how different they were, so he learned from the students. But from him himself, from him he didn't learn only one thing. Third approach is Davar Echad b'Mishnah Seinu Kamer. When he said, I only learned from him one thing in our Mishnah, means in our Mishnah, regarding Mishnayos, there's only one thing that he learned. But Brises and Gemaras, he learned a lot from him. There was tons that he learned from him in the 8 days. He meant in the Mishnayos, there was only one thing that was the correct version of our Mishnah, Ma'abrin with an ayin. Now another statement from Rabbi Yochanan regarding his time by Rabbi Yishia. He said, V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, K'sheinu loibdim Torah Rabbi Yishia, when we used to learn Torah by Rabbi Yishia, Hayinu Yeshvin Arba Arba Ba'ama, we would sit four students in one amma. Now, generally, a person takes up an amma, which is 2 feet, but we would have four people in that one amma. And Omer Rabbi says, "Kishayinu lebnim tayr etzel Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua." When we used to learn Tayr ben Elazar ben Shemua, "Hayinu yishvin shisha shisha ba'amma." We would sit 6 people in one amma. That is, we would come so close, wanted to hear what he had to say. We would push each other to get closer. We would have 6 people in the space where normally one person is. Another statement from Rabbi Yechanan regarding Rabbi Yishia is, "Omer Rabbi Yechanan." Now this great Rabbi Yishia in his generation was Reb Meir B'dayri. He was the equivalent of how Reb Meir was treated in his generation. What does that mean? Just like Reb Meir, that his colleagues could not understand him, and therefore they didn't paskin like him. As the Gemara said in the first parak of Yud Gimel Mabez, that he would say regarding something that was tameh, impure, that it was tar, that it was pure, and he would show even proofs. He would prove it, and they had no way of disproving him. That's how smart he was. So they said, we don't know what to paskin, because we know that this is wrong, but we can't disprove him. So too, Reb Yishia, he was so smart, so much ahead of the game, he was able to show things that were not, and no one could disprove him. He was the same way in his generation. Another statement from Rabbi Yechanan talking about the great ones. V'amar Rabbi Yechanan, Liban shel Rishonim, the heart, the intelligence, the broadness of the early ones, are kepischa shel ulam, was like the entrance of the hall. The ulam was the entryway coming into the Beis HaMikdash. So the ulam, that was 20 amas wide. That's how wide their heart was. It was totally open. The shel achrayim, but the later ones, kepischa shel heichal, was like the opening of the sanctuary itself, which was that entrance, was only 10 amas wide. V'anu, but us, kemloi nekev, we're like the completeness, the what fills up the eye of mechad sitkis, of a sitkis needle. And what type of needle is that? That's a type of a needle that mends where clothing is torn, and it's a very, very thin needle. So the eye is very, very narrow. That's how narrow and tight our hearts are. That's how much it's not open to hearing and being receptive and understanding things. So the Gemara says, Rishayim, who are these early ones? That's Rabbi Kiva. Achrayim, who are the later ones? That's Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. Ikadami, that those who say a different version, that Rishayim, the earlier ones, was a reference to Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. Achrayim, the later ones, a reference to Rabbi Yishia Beribi. V'anu and us, as he said before, Kamalei Nekev, Mechad Sitkis, were like the opening of the eye of this type of a needle that's very, very narrow. That's how far we are from the great ones. Amar Baya, Baya says, Banan and us, Kisichsa, were like a peg, Beguda in a wall. And when he says in the wall, it means in a narrow, small little crack in that wall, and you're trying to push this peg into it, Ligamara, that's how we are for Gemara. That's how much we cannot understand what we hear, only very little and only with great challenges and very difficulty. That's how far we are. That's how closed our hearts are. Amar Rava, Rava says, Vanan in us, ki etzba asa, we're like a finger, bikiri in wax, and that is in hard wax, where the finger can't get inside over there. Rather, but only gets a little bit of the wax that comes out.
That's how we are, lisvara, for logic, for understanding things. That's how we also, we barely scrape the surface. Rav Ashi says something similar. He says, Anan, we are ki etzba asa bebira, like a finger in a pit, l'shikha, to forgetting things. In other words, just how easy it is to get a finger inside a pit and then to take it out, that's how quickly we forget things. That's there's no friction there. There's nothing that's getting stuck. You put it in and out, that's how quickly we can forget. I'll learn it. So related to this, the Gemara brings, Amar Yehuda Marav, B'nai Yehuda, the people of Judea, they were very particular about the terminology, the language that they used. They spoke in very clear, lucid language, and not with some type of confused type of words, as the Gemara later says, that's how the B'nai Galil, the Galileans, that's how they spoke. It's very unclear, it was hard to understand what they were saying. So the B'nai Yehuda, that they spoke very clearly and articulate, so therefore their Torah was what lasted in them, and they continued on that legacy. B'nai Galil, but the people of the Galilee, shaloik b'dal l'shanim, that they weren't particular, they were very unclear when they spoke, lo niskayim atayrasim b'yadim, their Torah did not last by them. So the Gemara asked, I don't understand. Does the Messiah of Torah depend on how articulate you are and how clearly you speak? Ella, so rather, the Gemara says a little bit different. B'nai Yehuda did daiki lishna. The people of Judea that were very precise with their language, and that is, they would review what they had learned and heard from their teachers, exactly how they heard it. And that is because they used to learn by hearing orally. So they would repeat exactly what they heard, and then they would give signs, mnemonics, to remember exactly what it is that they heard, and that's how important Messiah is. And then they would be able to, again, since they went, and they were very precise with what they heard. So they knew how to make exact signs to memorize and to forget that they shouldn't forget. That was what they had done, this dual process of first being exacting in what they heard, because they would repeat exactly everything in the proper way, and then they would be able to make signs, mnemonics, to remember to memorize it. So in the sky, Mitrasim Yadim, so therefore their Torah lasted by them. However, the B'nai Galil, the Loi Daiki Lishna, that they weren't precise in the wording, therefore they couldn't make signs because they didn't remember exactly what it was that was said. So in the sky, Mitrasim Yadim, their Torah, their Messiah didn't last because they lost that it created like this type of telephone effect that when it passed over, it wasn't said exactly, and therefore the exact halacha was forgotten. A different approach in the Gemara, why the B'nai Yehuda retained their Torah and not the B'nai Galil, is B'nai Yehuda gamer mechad rabba. They learned from one teacher, therefore their Torah lasted by them. B'nai Galil delay gamer mechad rabba, but the people of the Galil that did not learn from one teacher, and therefore they would hear from this teacher in one type of way, and this teacher in another type of way, although they're teaching the same thing, but the different terminology would confuse them and make them forget, what was it said? He said this, he said that. Although it was the same teaching, you could have the same principle being explained, but by different people, and therefore, since they learned it, not from one rabbi, like the Skyma Torah, some of the other, then the Torah did not last by them. A third approach the Gemara brings, Ravina Amar, B'nai Yehuda, the people of Judea, the Galu Masechta, that they revealed the Masechta that they were learning. Rashi brings two interpretations. Either that they taught it to other people, they revealed it, and teaching helps a person to integrate and to understand clearly more what he's learning. Another pshat Rashi brings is that they would explain their different topics, and they would be precise in explaining. So what is it? They would concretize what they were learning until it was clear, and that what it means to reveal, not that things should be murky. Therefore by them, their Torah lasted. That they did not reveal, again, either that they did not teach or that they didn't like really get to the core issue of what they were learning, their Torah did not last. As the Gemara brings similarly, David Gali Masechta. David revealed the Masechta, and that is, as the Gemara is going to explain, and Shaul Loi Gali Masechta, Shaul did not reveal the Masechta. David the Gali Masechta, David that revealed the Masechta, as Rashi brings, as the Gemara in Brachas brings a Naftalid, which shows both Pshat and Rashi, A, that he was miyageh b'tayra, he toiled in Torah, and therefore he revealed what he was learning, he would make it clear. And also he was a mayhara, he would teach different things, so he was a teacher too. Both Pshatim and what does it mean to be Megal Masechta, as the Gemara there says, my hand is all soiled with blood and embryos and different things, and I would ask my Rebbe, did I judge properly, did I not? And the Gemara Maikotin elaborates on this. So he was Megal Masechta. So regarding him, Ksivbe, it says in the Pasuk Tehillim, Yireecha yiruni, David HaMelech says. Those who fear you, Hashem, will see me, v'yismocha, and they will rejoice, because what I tell them is clear, it's precise. What's usher is usher, what's mutter is mutter. However, Shaul, the Legalim Masechta, Shaul, that did not reveal the Masechta, again, either that he didn't teach, or that he didn't really get down and dig it up and be precise and be mavchin, and categorize his understandings,
Ksiv Bey, regarding him, it says in Shmuel Aleph that Ubachoil Asher Yifne, that wherever he would turn, and we continue on Talmud Beis, the Pasuk says Yashia, he would be wicked, and that is he didn't merit to teach the proper halacha. So Rabbi Yechanan continues talking about Shaul HaMelech, but I'm Rabbi Yechanan. Minayin Shemochala HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Oisa Oven. Where do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave Shaul HaMelech regarding that sin? Now that sin is the big sin that Shaul did, that was regarding the sin of the city of Noiv, which was the city of the Kahanim, that he thought that they were harboring David and conspiring with David HaMelech to overthrow Shaul. Therefore he killed out all those Kahanim, a great sin. So how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ended up forgiving him? Like it says in the Pasuk that when Shmuel was speaking to Shaul, because Shaul brought up Shmuel from the dead through a balas oiv, through these type of necromancers that they would use the bone and they would bring up someone that had already passed away. So Shmuel told Shaul, Umach, and tomorrow, out of Anecha Imi, you're going to die, you and your sons are going to be with me. But the idea is, what does it mean with me? Imi b'mechitzasi, me in my partition. In other words, you're going to be on the good side, you're going to be in Gan Eden, and therefore that's obviously a sign that he was forgiven. Now the Gemara goes back to what we were discussing in Amid Aleph. Amr Baba, i'ikad demashu lehu lebnei Yehuda. If there would be someone that would ask the people of Judea, the Daika Lishna, that they're very precise in their vernacular, in their terminology that they use, if ma'abritnan, the question that we had in Amid Aleph, is it that when you're extending the city, is it with an aleph that it's aver, or is it ma'abim with an ayin that's like a type of a pregnancy of the city? Or regarding a different question that we had, akuzaitnan, oy akuzaitnan, was that with an aleph or with an ayin? This is a Gemara in Bukhari on Daf Mem that speaks about the different blemishes on the carbon. That it says that if an animal only has one bay or one testicle, that's considered a mum, it's a blemish. Kiva says what you do is you put the animal on akuzai. Now, we're not sure if that's an ayin or an aleph, which basically means the hindquarters of the animal. And then you squeeze the animal over there to see if there's another testicle, because if it's there, then it would come out. It would come out, it would be visible. So we don't know if it's with an ayin or an aleph. Yadi, they would know. If you ask the B'nai Yehuda these questions, I'm sure they'll tell you the right answer. So the Gemara says, Sheil Nunu, they asked the B'nai Yehuda, V'amrile, and this is what they told them. Ikadetani ma'abrin, v'ikadetani ma'abrin. That those that, and they were precise, because this is the Messiah. Some say with an aleph, some say with an ayin. The same thing, some say with an aleph, and some say with an ayin. But now the Gemara goes a little deeper and says, B'nei Yehuda didaika lishni mai. What does this mean? Give me a case, an example, that shows that the B'nei Yehuda, the people of Judea, that they were precise, what they said, they were very clear, and therefore we know that we can trust their Messiah. So the Gemara illustrates this. Who bar Yehuda the Amalhu? There was this person from Judea that was telling the people around him, Talis Yeshli Limkar. I have a cloak, a talis, that I want to sell. So Amalhu, they said to him, Mai Gvan Talischa, what is the color of your talis? So Amalhu, he said to him, Kitradin Ali Adama, like beets that are on the earth, which meant to say that it's green, like the color of herbs that are on the ground. Now, he didn't want to say Yarak Rakas, that it's green, because that could also be interpreted as yellow. So he was very precise in what he said, that people knew exactly what was the color he was trying to say. But then the Gemara says, B'nei Galil Deloy Daiki Lishni Mahi. What is the understanding of that the people in Galilee were not precise in the words that they used? That they would be mumbling and you didn't understand what they were saying. So the Gemara illustrates this. The Hubar Gidli La. There was this person from the Galilee. He was going around and asking people, Amar Laman, Amar Laman, who has Amar? Now, this is what's called Suffer Rafa, which means to say it's a light type of a, you're not clear, you don't properly enunciate the letters. So therefore, people didn't understand what he was saying. Was he saying Amar with an ayin? Was he saying Chamar really? Or was he saying Imar with an aleph? So they said to him, Amrle, they said to him, Gililo Shaita, foolish Galilean. We don't know what you're asking. Are you asking Chamar Lemirkav? Are you asking for a donkey to ride on? Or Chamar Lemishti, or wine to drink? Or Amar Lemilbish, or wool to wear, and that is to make clothing out of it? Or Imra Lishkasa, or a sheep to slaughter? Basically, because they didn't properly pronounce the words, you couldn't hear if it was saying Imar, Amar, Chamar. They couldn't tell, and therefore they said, we don't understand you. There's so many different things you might be saying. Similarly, the Gemara brings that Hahi Itza, the Bayla Maimala Chaverta, there was this woman that wanted to tell her friend, Ta'i da Eichlich Chab. Come, I want to give you fat. Griven, I want to give you something Yishmak to eat. Now, she didn't properly pronounce and separate the letters one from the other. And to know where the words begin and where they end, and two letters connect, and therefore it's very unclear. Amrli, what she ultimately ended up telling her, at least this is what it sounded like, was shaloichti. Now shaloichti, she said with a chaf, and really she wanted to say shalovti with a vase, which the word shalovti would mean like the word mishulavis, which means one thing attached to another, which means my friend. But she didn't say shalovti; she said shlachti. Tochlich lavia. Now that sounds like a curse that a lion should eat you. That's tochlich lavia. But what really she was saying shalochti to that first tuf was from toi come, which was mumbled from the word shlochti. And then ochlach, I want to give you to eat, was the chal from tochlach. And then chalba was the chaf from the tochlach went together with lavia. It was split up. Instead of saying chalba, it was mumbled with tochlach and then lavia. So it sounded like instead of saying, come, I want to give you fat to eat, is let a lion eat you. So that's how unclear they were. Another illustration the Gemara brings. Hayitzadi was this woman, the ashla kameh didayna. They came in front of a judge. So Amrlei, she said to him, Mari Kiri, my master Kiri. Now she wanted to say Kiri with a kuf, now which would sound like that it's you're my master. But she said with a chaf, with a kuf, which it connotes that you're my slave. Tavla havisli. Now she wanted to say tavla with a tes, that I had a tablet. Instead she said tafla with a tuf and with a fe, which is that sounds like a beam. So she wanted to say a tablet, she said a beam. The gonvach min. Now she wanted to say that gunvu mimeni, that they stole it from me. Yet she didn't say that. She said gunvuch min, which sounds like that they stole you from me, which means that they stole the judge. Ukudu havas, and it was now, because the word ukudu sounds like right, that it means right now. But she really wanted to say ukedan, which means like this. She was demonstrating how big it really was, and how was she demonstrating it? She said the kad shadru lochi leve, because if they would hang you on this. This is the example she used. Leimati karecha ara, your feet would not reach the ground. That's how tall this tablet would sound like a beam, because she said it improperly, that if they hung you on it, your feet wouldn't touch the ground. In other words, that's how foolish they were. Not only did they not speak clearly, but go ahead. This is how you want to demonstrate how tall it is, how big it is, by saying if they hung you on it, your feet wouldn't even reach the ground. However, another Gemara illustrates the exact opposite. How certain people are very intelligent. Not only do they speak clearly, but they know how to communicate that only who they want to understand understands, and no one else has to understand, or they say it in a delicate way. The Gemara says, Amasa debei Rebbe, the maidservant of the house of Rebbe, ki havis mishtoi b'lashon chachma, when she would speak in a very intelligent way, Amar hochi, she would say as follows. It was something delicate, she didn't want to say something improper, but she wanted people to get the hint. So she said to the students that were there in the house of Rebbe, she said, Alas, Nakvas bakad. The ladle hits the barrel. Which basically she was saying is that the wine has already been consumed, and therefore the ladle is touching the bottom of the barrel. So therefore, yidun nishraya likinehan, let the eagle fly to their nest, which basically was saying, let the students go back home because, hey, the meal is over, there's no more wine. That's how she hinted, alluded to them that it's the meal is over. But when she wanted them to sit down, that she said there's food to be served, she wouldn't just say, okay, come everybody eat. She would tell them, Yade vasar chavertimina, that remove a piece of the other one from it, which basically was hinting that although this barrel of wine might be finished, but let's remove the lid of a different barrel so we could pour more wine. Vesiskefe olas pekar, and then let the ladle float in the barrel, which means to say that there's going to be a lot of wine, that it's going to be floating there. Ki'ilfa de azlaviyama, like a ship that goes in the sea, that's how much water there is, and therefore it's floating. She was saying that now there is enough wine, everyone could sit down, there's enough food to be served, and everyone could join the meal. The Gemara brings a different illustration of this chachma. Rabbi Yisi bar Asin, ki'av mishtoi b'loshon chachma, when he would speak in wisdom, with intelligence, which in this case meant he didn't want anyone else to understand what he was saying. So Amma, he would say as follows, Asuli Sherbimish, but make for me an oxen judgment, which really he was trying to say he wanted beets. Now the word for beets is trudin. The word trudin is tardain. Now the word shar is in Aramaic is tur, that's tar, and din is mishpat. So trudin, beets, is really sherbet mishpat. So he would say, I want an ox in judgment. Bitur miskin, on a poor mountain. Now that in Hebrew is har, that's the equivalent of saying hardal, a poor mountain, which is hardal. The hay and ches are very much interchanged. So hardal is mustard. So he was trying to say, I want beets and mustard. Instead of saying that, he would say, I want an ox in judgment on a poor mountain. Similarly, v'kad havashol b'yishpiza, when he would inquire about people's hostesses and hosts and their inn where they were staying, he would ask the people, Amar Hochi would say, Gvar pum den chai is this person's mouth. This person's mouth alive. Now, what did that mean? That because gvar, a man, ish, is like the word ush. That's what he was saying. That ush is, and then pi, the pum of this mouth, is like the word pi, ush pi, and dain, this, is like zed, that would be ush pi zi. So he would be saying, ush pi zicha, that's gvar pum din chai, is this person, his mouth, alive, that would be saying the word ush pi zichi, he would be alluding to that. Mazu tov yesh, what good is there? In other words, how good is it? How is the place that you're staying? Is it a good inn or not? But that is, he would use this type of cryptic fashion in a lashon of chachma that no one else but that person would understand what he was saying. Rebavo, kihav mishtoi b'lash hachachma, when Rebavo would talk in an intelligent type of way, havamachi, he would say as follows, esrigu lefchamen, make the coals as an esrig. That is, I want you to burn up the coals, that it should be inflamed, that it should be red like an esrig. Arkiu lezahavin, I want you to spread out, which is like the word rikia, like the firmament, to gold, that it should be flaming so red like gold, which basically he was trying to say that they should spread out the coals that are flaming on the opening of the oven, that he could warm himself up by there. But instead of saying that, he would allude to it by using this terminology. And then he would say, Va'asuli shnei magidi ba'alata, make for me two talkers in the dark. Now that was a reference. He wanted roosters that are the talkers, because they tell people the time of the night. They were talkers in the night. That was a reference that he wanted roosters. Ikadami, that those that say, V'yasli bahen shnei magidi balata, make for me with them, meaning on the coals, I want you to prepare for me roosters, he would say, by using the talkers during the night. So the Gemara continues on this theme. Amru le Rabbanan Rebavo. The Rabbanan said to Rebavo, Hatzvinenu, which means show us, as Rashi says, the pasuk of Mishlei and Eshes Chayil, Tzefiyah Halichis Beisa, that she oversees, she sees all the different things that go on in her home. So let us see, show us, Hechin Rebbe Lo Tzafin, where is Rebbe Lo hiding? That is because the students didn't know where he went. They were asking from him, where did Rebbe Lo go? So Amru Lehani said to them in this cryptic fashion, he said, Olat Bina'ara, The whole last night he rejoiced with a young girl, Aharoinis, that was from the family of Aaron, Aharoinis, that's the last one, Iranis, that's a jumpy, wakey type of one, Vanirasa, and she kept him up, and therefore now he's sleeping. So that he basically wanted to tell him that he's sleeping, but he said in this way. So Amrila, there are those that say that Isha, it was a reference to a woman, that Aharoinis, from the family of Aaron, means she was a daughter of a Kayan. Acharonis, the last one, means because his first wife had died and this is the last one. When he said Iranis, that this is the one that's awake, he meant to say a girl that's very rambunctious and has a lot of energy, like somebody that's up and awake. And Hanirasa meant that she kept him up. He couldn't sleep because she was making action the whole night, and therefore she kept him up. And therefore now he's sleeping. Vamrila, those that say that it was a reference to Mesechta, to the tractate that he was learning. That Aharonis, from the family of Aaron, means that he was learning Seder Kachim, which is the Avoda of the Kahanim of Aaron. Aharonis, the last one, means that he finished the last one and he started this one. Iranis, something that's a jumpy one, means to say that it's something that's awake and lively. It means something that's deep and it was very difficult and he was up all night learning. It was very deep, and therefore now he's sleeping. But that's what he used to allude to them, that he's sleeping. Amri Leila Rabbi Loi. There was other Rabban that said to Rabbi Lai, Hatzvinenu Hechen Rebavo Tzafen, please show us where Rebavo is hiding. So Amar Lehen, he said to them, Nisya'itz Bamachter. He took counsel from he who crowns, which basically that means that he took permission from the Nasi, from the prince. Why is the prince, the Nasi, called the Machter, he who crowns? Because he's the one that gives permission for who gets smicha to be considered ordained, to be called a Rebbe, someone that could paskin. And from then on, this person is fit to... He's considered that he's crowned to be called a rabbi, and he's considered what's called a mumchel, a rabbi, someone that's proficient for the public. And therefore, if he makes a mistake, for example, he doesn't have to pay. V'hingiv lemifi baishes, and they went to the south to Mifi baishes, which was a reference to the elders in the southern part, which they were very smart, and because they were called by the name of Mifi baishes, who was also a very great and smart man, that's why they were called Mifi baishes. Again, that was alluding to them where he went in this form of chachma of speaking. So on this topic, I'm Yeshua Mechananya, Miyamei lo nitzchani adam. No one had ever gotten the best of me in a verbal type of discussion. Chutz mi isha, except for a woman, tinek, a boy, betinoikis, and a girl. What are these three examples? Isha mahi, what was the case with the woman? So pamachas nisarachti itzlach sanyachas. One time, I was being hosted by a certain
person, by a certain host and hostesses. Asas ali poil, and she made for me beans, the woman of the house. The first day I ate up the beans and I didn't leave over even one drop. It was great. Again, the second day she made for me beans, and I went and I ate it and I didn't leave over anything. On the third day, she quote unquote burnt it with salt. That's what the word haktiach means. But what it basically means is that she oversalted it. It was way too much. So kivin shetiamti meshachti yadim. Once I tasted it, I drew back from it. I didn't eat it. Amrili, she said to me, Rabbi, my master, mimneima in chasai, why aren't you eating tonight? Amarti la, I said to karasa adati mimoyjem. You know what? I already ate before. I had lunch, a big lunch. I don't need to eat anymore. Amrili, she said to me, hayilachal limshach yadchem in apas. You should have drawn back from eating bread. Why'd you eat so much bread if you're not hungry anymore or you had eaten already? In other words, she was basically saying, why aren't you eating the beans, but you ate bread? So Amrili, she said to me, Rabbi, maybe it's because you didn't leave over any from the first plates, which this is the idea where she got the best of him, because what he had done the first two times that he ate it all up and he didn't leave over, she's going to prove that there's halacha that you are supposed to leave over some of the plates. So you're saying maybe you're making up for it. You didn't leave over from the first two plates, now you're leaving over so much now by this third night from the whole plate. Didn't the sages say that we don't leave over anything when we're pouring out a pan? That is when the servant is pouring out of the ilpas from the pan into the plates that's being served. So although the shamash, the servant wants to eat, the one who's serving wants to eat something also, but he doesn't leave over in the pan for himself. Rather, where does his food come from? A mesharin peya bakara. Rather, everybody that gets food, the people that are being served, they leave over a little bit from their plate and then they give that back to the shamash. And then that is what the shamash eats. And basically she was hinting to him that, oh, because you never left over from the plates, which is supposed to come back to me, or whatever it is that's the shamash that's serving, and therefore you're making up for it now. So she got the best of him, that she was hinting to him in the proper way, in the derech chachma, that he didn't do that halacha properly, of leaving over from the food of his plate in the first two nights. Tinaik is mahi. What was the case with the girl? So he says, one time I was going on the road, and then there was a path that went through a field, and I was taking that path to go through. So one girl told me, she said, Rebbe, isn't this a private field? What are you doing here? So I said to her, no, loy, derech kavushi. What do you mean? You could tell this is a very worn out path. You see that obviously this is where the public goes. So Amrili, she said to me, yeah, listim kamaischa kavshu. Robbers like you are the ones that made this into a designated path. Doesn't mean that it's right, because everybody does it. You're right, everybody does it. But that doesn't mean that it's right. Who said that right away? And she got the best of him. Tinik maihi. What was the case with the boy? So Pamachas Isim Halach Baderch says, one time I was going on the road, and I saw a boy standing there by the crossroad, by the fork in the road, where you can go one way or the other. And I said to him, what is the way to go to the city? So Amrali, he said to me, Zuk Tzur Varucha. This way is short but long. But this one is long but short. So Valachni Biktzur Varucha. So there's a short one that's long, but it's short. So I took the short and long. Once I got to the city, which was very close, but I saw that it was surrounded, that entry we ended with gardens and orchards. In other words, there was no way to access the city. It was short, but it was very long. I came back, I said to him, my son, you told me it was short. Yeah, but didn't I tell you that it's long? And therefore the other one, when he said it was aruchu ktsara, that it was long but short, it means, yeah, the other way was longer to get there. But it's shorter, and that is when you get there, you find that there's an opening how to get into the city. So though it's long, but in a sense it's short, this way, yeah, it's short, but really, it's really long. So neshakta v'roisha, I kissed him on his head, v'matlan, and I said to him, Ashreichem Yisrael, how praiseworthy are you, Klal Yisrael, shekulchem chacham gedoyl matam, you're all wise people, migdolchem adchenchem, from the big ones to the small ones, you're all wise people. This is now related to, again, the proper communication and the terminology and the language a person should use. The Gemara illustrates a halacha with this. Rabbi Yosi HaGlili have a ka'aza ba'orcha. He was once going on the road. Ashkechei le'Bruya, he met up with Bruya, and Bruya was the wife of Remeir. She was the daughter of Reb Chanina ben Tradian. She was a very great and well-learned, well-versed woman. Amalah, so he said to her, Be'eze derech ne'lech l'lud. What is the way, what's the path that I can take to get to Lud? He was asking her for directions. Amalei, she said to him, Glili Shaita, foolish Galilean. It seems to be that this is the terminology that was used, and she was using it to the great Rabbi Yosi HaGlili. Lekach Amar Chacham, isn't this what the sages tell us in the famous Mishnah in Avos, Al Tarbe Sicha Me'isha? A person should not talk
unimportant, at least, type of discussion with a woman, you shouldn't talk more than you have to with me. You should have said, Be'ezel alud. I would have understood what you're saying. Why are you using so many words? Al tarbesicha me'isha. You're speaking too much. Glili shaita. Similarly, the Gemara brings that Bruya, Ashkechase lahu tamida. She met up with this student that have a kugaris belechisha, that was learning quietly. So not only did she give like Musa Trabiyasek Lili, so we continue on top of Nundalim and Aleph. So Bachabe, she kicked the student. Amalei, she said to him, she gave him Musa too. Loikacht Kosev, isn't this what the Pasuk in Shmuel Bey says? Arucha bakoil, arranged with everything, ushmur and secure. What does that mean? It means, im arucha b'remach evram shalach, that if it's arranged in your 248 limbs, which basically means that you can't do it in this quiet way. You have to get into it. You have to verbalize it. You have to be screaming. You have to get your whole body into it. Then mishtameres. Then it'll be safe and secure by you. Vimla, but if not, in mishtameres, it's not going to be saved by you. You have to get into your learning. It has to be in your bones, so to speak. And only then will you remember your learning.